Coming up on BYU Basketball with Kevin Young. For the first time since joining the Big 12, the Cougs have won three straight conference games, and win number three was a wild one. We'll look back at the battle with Baylor and on to Orlando with the coach and his pops. Coming up next on BYU TV and ESPN+.
BYU Basketball with Kevin Young is presented by Siegfried & Jensen, helping Utah families for over 30 years.
It is time. Hello, hello, audience. Hello, Cougar Nation. Good evening once again. Welcome back inside Studio C in the BYU Broadcasting Building on the beautiful Brigham Young University campus in Provo, Utah. Glad you're with us for our weekly exclusive weekly check-in on the BYU men's basketball program. We've got a live studio audience just to make sure they were real. You're real, right? Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And we are live and on demand via the BYU TV and BYU Radio apps and ESPN+. Coming up on this week's show, we will, among other things, recap last night's overtime win over the Baylor Bears. That was a fun one. Father's Day is a few months away, but it's Dad's Night on our show. Our special, special guest this week is the father of head coach Kevin Young. He is Phil Young. We'll test Mr. Young's specialized knowledge in our weekly game show segment. We've got some audience Q&A as well. BYU basketball trivia later in the program also. Let's get tonight's show on the road and bring in to Studio C the coach who's led BYU to three consecutive conference wins for the first time in the Big 12. Here he is, the first-year bench boss of your BYU Cougars, Kevin Young. Does this happen into every room you walk into, basically?
Far from it, so I appreciate the...
rousing welcome. Yeah, good to have you back. And Wednesday night this week, this is the one week we're not on Thursday because we have some travel plans this week.
Yep, heading out to Florida. Go out there and play a high-powered offense against UCF, and yeah, it should be good.
Coming off a memorable night at the Marriott Center just last night.
Yeah, man, that place was rocking in there. Great environment, as always, but felt like there was some extra juice in the building. Some celebrity sightings in the building, too, which was cool and unexpected. But, just all around great night. You know, we were able to build on kind of what we were doing prior to that game, and so it was just a good night all around.
So on one side of the courtside seat, you had Kalani, and on the other side of the courtside seat, you had Conor McGregor. They did take a picture together. But I was wondering, who would come out on top if those two wanted to really get after it?
I wouldn't say a bad word about either one of them, so I'll leave that one alone.
That was pretty cool. There were the rumblings that he would be at the game because he was, a Jazz game night before, and he'd been doing some stuff with a local firm with which he's associated. But he didn't just come. He came and he stayed. You know, sometimes celebs will come. Maybe they'll duck out at halftime. He stuck around and got involved with The Rock. Seemed to have a really good time last night.
Yeah, I saw some stuff after last night. People were sending me. Looked like he was enjoying all the things. It's cool, man. Really cool.
Very cool. To expose someone like that to American college basketball and to do it at a high level. And that was a high-level vibe last night with two really good teams. I thought the matchup was really good coming in. There were a lot of similarities metrics-wise and such. And you guys put on a heck of a show. Great game.
Yeah, high-level stuff going on all around. You know, obviously a really well-coached team, storied program. I thought there was just big play after big play. You know, every time we felt like we were getting comfortable or make a run, they'd hit a big three. Answered literally every time it felt like that. And then just the star power, you know, the young star power for both teams was on full display in front of a lot of, you know, people from the NBA there to see it. So I think everyone kind of got what they, you know, wanted relative to that. And then just happy that we were able to, you know, be on the other side of a close game like that.
On that note, you've had a lot of NBA people at pretty much every game you've played this year. How much awareness is there from the guys? And is it ever a threat of being a distraction, knowing that there are so many eyes focused on performers that are part of a team?
I think at this point it's normalized, you know. Or I mean, we've had, you know, so many scouts at practice. I mean, you've been there, scouts, GMs, presidents, you know, a lot of them I know I've grown up with them in the league. And so I think our guys kind of understand it's just part of what this place is now. And then last night, obviously playing against, you know, they have some young studs of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a good night for NBA people to come see the matchup.
17,000 plus in the stands, and BYU sits there in the top 10 nationally, seventh. There are, you know, there's 360 programs playing basketball, and BYU's number seven in average attendance. You never want to take it for granted, but that's a really impressive number BYU turns out night in, night out.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. You know, the sheer number of fans is impressive, no question, but just the production is second to none. I mean, I've been in Madison Square Garden. I've been in the Staples Center.
You're talking game night environment.
Yeah. I mean, just the production crew over there, like, just, it's just electric, man. They do an amazing job. And then obviously the fans feed off of that, and the players feed off of that. And it just makes for a fun atmosphere.
Well, it's as good a show as there is. And it looks good. It sounds good. And it actually has a tactical or a game impact. I mean, it helps you win games.
It does. I think it fuels the guys. I mean, one of our assistant coaches was talking about it today. Just, you know, when you play or coach or play in a area where people actually understand the game, you know, like you play in, hope no one's a Lakers fan, but you play in L.A., they don't, you know what I mean? They don't quite, they're just kind of like bumps on a log. You get in, like, basketball cities, though, and, like, it's a big moment. The fans are getting charged up, you know, which is what happened in our game last night, and I do think it makes a big difference for the players.
How fun is it, by the way, to be scoreboard watching and in the mix for standings, battles in a really good basketball league right now?
Yeah, I mean, this league is fun, man. I think we said it last night on the radio, but you know, I was watching the Arizona Iowa State game, and a Big 12 promo came on the commercial, and it was like there was a soundbite that just said, like, every game in the Big 12 feels like an NCAA tournament game, and so. It does, and that's what makes it fun. It makes it really competitive. And, you know, to be in the mix of all of it is, you know, right where we want to be.
Let's get to Baylor. Coming off that weekend win over Cincinnati to make it back-to-back Big 12 wins, BYU was home to Baylor last night, looking to go back-to-back-to-back against the Bears. Let's look back now at stats and highlights presented by Intermountain Health, official medical provider of BYU Athletics. And we will shine the spotlight on top player performances to kick things off. And we start with Cannon Catchings, and why would we not? Career-high 23 points. He sets a BYU freshman record for most points scored on a perfect shooting night. 4-for-4 on his twos, 4-for-4 on his threes, and 3-for-3 on his free throws. And his point total coach has gone up in 5 straight games now.
Yeah, it was great to see. You know, he's a young guy, you know, and he hit a little rocky patch there, and just really proud of the way that he, you know, kind of worked through that, you know, and it was work. You know, he's done a lot with John Linehan, one of our assistant coaches, and Kyle Sturdivant, one of our grad assistants. Have really, the three of them have really put in a lot of time together. You know, Craig Manning's done a lot. So there's a lot of people that are helping Cannon.
You know, and Craig's your mental strength guy.
Yeah, sorry, yep, Craig's our mental strength coach. You know, so he's been putting in the work and you know, happy to see him see the fruits of those labors. And it's been cool because his teammates have really rallied around him as well. And everybody was really happy for him last night.
Among the celebrities in the building last night, he has a pretty famous relative as well that was watching him last night.
Yeah, so his aunt, Tamika, is one of the all-time, there she is right there, one of the all-time great WNBA players. So she was at practice the day before. His mom was also there. Yeah, his grandpa played in the NBA. So he comes from a basketball family and is very well supported.
He had a play that we may have seen it in the clip there. I can't remember, but his reverse lay-in, I'm not sure how long he was in the air on that, but that was an exceptional play.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, he's got, there it is right there. I mean, he's got so much talent and so much ability. You know, we see bits of it, you know, at practice. So for him to put it all together in a game, it was really good. And hopefully it's a confidence builder for him and something he can move forward with.
I almost wanted to make a Dr. J reference there on the play, but you know, he really did an exceptional play there.
Yeah, no, that was remarkable. And he's so gifted and at his size to be able to do the things he does. I mean, that's why a lot of those NBA people were there, and I'm sure excited about what they saw.
Let's talk about Richie Saunders. Sixth consecutive game for Rich in double-figure scoring. And until a couple of weeks ago, He hadn't even had as many as three straight games in double-figure scoring. Now you expect it from him every night. He's top five in this league in conference play in scoring, in field goal percentage, in three-point percentage. Still tops in conference play, number one in three-point field goals made per game. Led the team in rebounds last night. Maybe not his best shooting night, but because of everything else he was doing, Coach, it was still a very efficient, effective night for him.
I mean, the thing I loved about his performance last night was, it wasn't going his way in terms of the ball going in the basket, but he made three huge plays down the stretch. That and one that they just showed, I lost my mind on.
Yes.
and then the floater, and I think he made another play. But just we've needed somebody to step up in those moments that can make those critical plays for us. He was there. Dallin made a couple as well. But Richie's been rock solid for us all year, and he's a guy that's, I think, gained the respect of the league, gained the respect of just a lot of people that are watching him play.
It's tough to be all league in the Big 12, but he's having that kind of season right now.
He is, yeah. And I think when teams scout us, I know Yegor and Cannon, they get some of the headlines with all the NBA stuff. Richie's been our most consistent guy. He's been rock solid, and we've talked about this before, but he's got a big NBA future ahead of him as well.
And I'm sure it's one of the plays you're thinking about too, but he makes a bucket and then sneaks in for the steal on the inbounds that turns into a three from Yegor. It's a little five-point burst. This might be, yeah, right, yeah, he sneaks in and finds Yegor for the three here.
Yeah, I mean, he just never quits. He's got a that was a big-time play by Yegor, but yeah, Richie just, he just never stops. The motor just continues to run, and our guys feed off that.
Let's run it down the roster. You mentioned Yegor. 15 points for a second consecutive game for the Russian freshman. 10 of his last 12 free throws as well. He's had six or more assists in four of his last five games. He is second in the conference in Big 12 play in assists per game. He's sixth in assists to turnover. He's made threes now in four of his last five games, and the three-point shot wasn't falling for a while. Now that's coming around for him.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, you expect the assist. I mean, that's naturally what he does. I like the way he's been attacking, though. Being able to get downhill, get to the rim. When he takes good threes, I think they're going in. Then to be able to step up to the line and knock his free throws down. So he's put a lot of work in, just with his mechanics, trying to get back to the basics of his form and his form shooting and stuff like that. And he's another guy who, hadn't shot it well, but confidence was not waned and was continuing to work, and happy that he's been able to sort of turn that corner a little bit.
He was our postgame radio guest last night. A great line on the radio. He said, "I'm selfish about my assists, but it's okay to be selfish about assists because assists are sharing."
he's got some good one-liners. He's a joy to play with, joy to coach, and a lot of some of those threes Cannon hit were on the other side of those passes that Yegor was making.
Trevin Nell last night, 11 points, 3 rebounds, an assist, a couple steals. Sixth consecutive start for Trev. Double-figure scoring in 3 of his last 5. His 3-point field goal streak, and he has a lot of them, by the way, are at 60 games and counting. That was kind of a fun way to start overtime, yeah. By the way, was on the tap. You don't see that very often.
No, you don't. I mean, we talk a lot about just trying to be the first team ready in any environment. We talk about jump balls. That's in overtime games, that jump ball play is huge. So the fact we were able to get a little steal there and get to a bucket was big. And I thought him starting the game out, burying that three on the first play of the game, kind of set the tone. But, yeah, man, he's been really good for us.
Yeah, in overtime, you get the first and the last possession of OT. Dawson Baker, 8 points, but including the game-clinching free throws last night. He was 4 for 4 at the free throw line, made those two that sealed the deal. Two massive free throws. Again, people say, oh, free throw. There's a lot of pressure. And the step up when he did was huge. He's averaging just under 10 points a game in his last 5. He's the mid-range master. Love the way Dawson's playing right now.
Yeah, I think he's really thriving in his role, in an unselfish way. He's a guy that could very easily, be playing a lot more minutes than he is. But he's accepted his role. He's come in and given us a really nice scoring punch. I thought he made some really timely baskets in that game and the game before that. And then him and I joke actually about the free throw thing, because I don't know if anybody was there at the Marriott Madness or whatever we were calling that. Is that that's what we called it earlier in the year?
The Mayhem thing? I think you're right.
Where we had whatever, yeah. We introduced the team or whatever. So I put him on the spot in front of everybody that was there. We were doing our little offensive rebound kickout thing, and I was explaining it to the group, and he didn't know I was going to do it. And like 2 seconds before, I was like, hey, can you make the shot? He's like, ah, what? Yeah, sure. Comes out, bangs a three. So ever since then, I'm like, Dawson, I got no worries about you in pressure situations. And he stepped up last night. And
total trust in Dawson Baker. Yeah. I love it. Dallin Hall last night played 26-plus minutes against Baylor. He goes 7 points, 2 assists, and a steal. He hits that three early in overtime to give you a 5-point lead. He has multiple assists now in 6 straight. And over his last 4 games, Coach, only 5 turnovers.
I thought he was huge last night. You know, he's a guy, they were switching a lot, and he's a guy that can really punish the switches. That three we just saw, and then some of those drives where we were able to get a mismatch and him drive to the basket. So super proud of him as well in terms of just handling the role that he's been asked to play this year. Been really mature about how he's attacked that and made some massive plays last night to help us get that win.
Your opponents have to deal with Yegor, and then you bring in another point guard that's one of the most experienced guys in the league already as a reserve point. It's a nice luxury to have.
It is a luxury to have. And just trying to wind Dallin up, man, to be aggressive. You know, he's had to adjust, you know, from what he's done in the past, but still trying to keep him super aggressive as a scorer, as just a threat where they have to really worry about him. And he's capable of doing it and made some, you know, like I said, some really timely plays last night.
I want to shout out Fus a little bit. Fuseni Traore, 7-5 last night in 16 minutes. He's second to Kaba on the roster in rebounds per 40 right now. He's the Cougars' field goal percentage leader on the year and in a BYU career. And after last night, he's now top 30 all-time in scoring. And he passed our good friend Nate Austin for 13th on the career rebounding list last night.
I got to rub that in Nate's face tomorrow when I see him for sure. Fus is rock solid, man. You feel like he's going to score every time he gets it down there. So the times that he does miss, leaves you a little frustrated because you just expect so much of him and he expects so much of himself. But, you know, he's been really good. I like the 1-2 punch of him and Kaba. They're different. They provide different things, and I think they complement each other well.
Cato, our final stat slate now, and I know that Coach Voigt's probably thinking that 50% field goal from Baylor is too high, but that said, this was a gunslinger game. It ends up, you know, in the 80s and 90s with some overtime, and usually, I shared this with you last night, but if Baylor shoots 50 or better, that's going to be a win for them. So to win that kind of game, you had to play exceptional basketball.
Yeah, I think you told me that they've won 65 straight when they've shot over 50, and yeah. So that's incredible. But yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to our offense for sure. But honestly, you have to give them credit. I thought Mawut did a phenomenal job on Edgecombe, and he ends up with 28 points, you know. And, you know, we all want to play good defense, but good offense beats good defense, you know, it just does. And so those young men for them were able to make plays. But, you know, we were for us to shoot 55%, you know, I thought our offense, you know, really in the first half got really going. You know, we kind of got in mud a little bit in the second half, but we found ways to, you know, make enough plays.
3 straight league games, though, shooting in the 50s, that's hard to do.
It is hard to do. You know, I think it speaks to our unselfishness, you know, not just moving the ball, but like running the floor, like the layup Trevin had on the far end in the first half. You know, that's it. That's what I'm, you know, Cannon sprints to the corner. They're so worried about him getting a three off, and Trev just walks in for a layup. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that our guys are doing necessarily doesn't show up in the individual stat line for them. But when you look at, you know, I think we're leading the league in effective field goal percentage. I mean, that yep. takes a group effort to get that done.
Yeah, effective and twos and threes, all first place. And that 45-7 bench number was big for you, too, as well.
It was. And, you know, it can be a blessing and a curse to have, you know, so many good players on one team in terms of guys that can come and actually produce. But, you know, I think our guys have accepted their roles. These guys want to win, and, you know, people are buying in to get that done.
Okay, some specialized stats now. BYU defensive rebounding percentage. Baylor's a really good offensive rebounding team, so defensive rebound at 59 is not bad at all. Offensive rebound percentage, better than Baylor had been allowing. You get to the line 26 times, more than Baylor had been allowing. Baylor shot 24 free throws, a little more than they had been taking, so kind of a wash there. And then your assist rate wasn't as high as maybe you'd like it to be, but there were other things you were doing that kind of mitigated that or helped that.
Yeah, there was. I mean that to get basically 40% of your misses back, I mean, that's a huge number. So you shoot a high clip, and then the ones you do miss, you're getting almost half of them back. So that's, you know, pretty good math, pretty good odds there. I thought, you know, we were able to get to the free throw line and capitalize, which has really hurt us in some of the other close games. And that was a big, big part of that win.
Okay, let's check out the BYU team sheet and compare it from last week to this week. And BYU moving up in all the main metrics, up a good deal in net. KenPom, the BPI, and the KPI. KPI sees a huge jump because that's kind of a resume measurement, and Baylor's as good a resume win as you've had this year.
Yep. No, we needed one against a quality opponent, and they obviously are that. And, you know, it was a good thing for us to build on. You know, they've been the storied program, obviously, so good win at home, and then hopefully we can take it on the road now and go get the next one.
Quad one win as well. You're in a stretch of five straight quad one opportunities, and that was the first one, and you got that one taken care of.
We did, and we need to keep kind of pounding the rock on that front, where we got to knock off some good teams to put ourselves in a position to do what we ultimately want to do.
Okay, BYU currently a top-tier team in the Big 12 and looking to push even higher into the top half. Let's take a look at league standings with February just around the corner. There are three more games tonight. So all the teams you see that have eight games played, they're all playing their ninth game tonight right now. But there you see BYU in sixth for the moment, a tie for sixth. And the top eight teams don't have to play on the first day in Kansas City. We'll talk more about KC here in this next month as we get into the back half. But how do you like where you're situated right now, Coach?
We're in a good spot. You know, it kind of grinds the gears a little bit when you see that, thinking about the one possession games that didn't go our way. But I think those games have helped us. I think they've helped us, find ways to kind of just dig in. I think they'll help us even more as we kind of move through this thing. But we just want to focus on the next game and just try to keep sort of moving up those standings one game at a time.
And the next game is this weekend in Orlando. BYU will hit the halfway mark in its conference campaign. Let's check out the conference schedule. Most of the rest of the way in the Big 12. The one game you don't see is the regular season finale, home to Utah, and that'll be on March 8th. But this takes care of the bulk of the rest of the Big 12 campaign. And you see, Coach, you're in a stretch right now where three of your next four will be on the road.
Yep, that's an important stretch for us. Obviously playing on the road anywhere is hard. There's some really quality teams on that schedule on the road. I mean, UCF in particular, because that's the next one. I mean, they're as potent as an offensive team that's probably in the country. I mean, they got some guys who can really put the ball in the basket. They shoot a lot of threes. They play really fast. And so it'll be, whoever decides to play defense first type of game probably gets the win.
I was watching the first probably 10 to 12 minutes of the KU-UCF game again today. Most of the first half I watched, and it was like a three-point contest in the first half, just back and forth, and everyone banging threes last night.
Yeah, and I mean, I welcome that. I mean, I'd put our group up in a three-point contest with any team in the country. So, our defense will be really important in that game. Like it is every night, but particularly against a high-powered offense.
Should be a fun one in Orlando Saturday afternoon. Time for our first break, and this reminder that your day-to-day Cougar sports play-by-play happens on BYU Sports Nation. Join Spencer Linton and Jerem Jordan weekdays, noon Eastern, BYU TV, and, of course, BYU Radio. When we come back, a very, very special guest joining us in Studio C as BYU basketball with Kevin Young continues. Stay with us.
BYU Basketball with Kevin Young is brought to you by Siegfried & Jensen, helping Utah families for over 30 years, and Intermountain Health, official medical provider for BYU Athletics.
That last shot we saw, they called that a two, didn't they?
I think so.
I think they did.
Yeah.
I don't even think they reviewed it. The more I saw it, I'm like, wow, that was actually not a bad look. It looked like it might have been a three.
I know. That's what I was looking at, too.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. All right, welcome back to BYU Basketball with Kevin Young. Well, a little more than 43 years ago, Kevin Young was born in Salt Lake City. So his coming to BYU is a homecoming of sorts. But it was Texas and Georgia where Kevin grew up as the son to Phil and Jody and the brother to five siblings. And tonight, we get to learn more about the coach's life journey that has brought him to BYU as we bring into Studio C the father of the Cougs head coach, Mr. Phil Young. Just another typical day for you.
What a welcome. Yeah. I feel like it's my birthday or something. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. You're geared up. You got some Y logos working for you.
Yes, sir.
So what does BYU mean to you?
You know, probably about 1982 or so, we were here on vacation. We were living in Texas. And we're coming down the 15. And the kids saw the Y up on the mountain. And it must have been a little later than that because you were, I don't think you were born yet. Matter of fact. So it must have been his older brother and sister. And they saw the Y. What does that Y mean, Daddy? And I said, well, that's for Young. It's for Brigham Young University. And we have a little connection to Uncle Brigham. And we always thought that was kind of cool. My wife's dad graduated from BYU with a master's in education. They have a neat story just in a nutshell. My wife's parents grew up in a Baptist children's home in Troy, Alabama. Went to California after World War II, joined the church there, and came up to BYU, got his master's in education, and moved to California. That's where I met him. He was dean of students at my high school that I went to. And so BYU has always been, has a special place. Our two youngest boys graduated from BYU. Kevin came up here with our son Daniel, and eventually the twins, I think, came like the next year. So we had all four boys here at one time when Kevin was coaching at Utah Valley. And so we've always, you know, my wife was born here in Provo. So we've always had a place in our heart for, you know, for Provo and for Utah in general. But BYU has been it's even more special now. It's almost unbelievable that, you know, he's such a part of what's going on here. And not only basketball, but just the mission of BYU. And so it's great. I mean, we've been loving it as a family and it's just been fun.
Could either of you ever have envisioned what we have going on right now?
I definitely could not.
No. No.
It just, no. I mean, I was just on a totally different path, you know. It just kind of came out of nowhere. And so it just kind of surprised all of us. But the more that we've gotten comfortable with, I think, like you said, it's kind of been fun for, you know, our whole family.
Yeah, to kind of come full circle from his UVU days. You know, and then traveling all over the place and coming back here has been kind of incredible.
Feels like a great fit, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
How much of it has become a family thing where it's not, but it's not just Kevin, it's siblings and it's parents and it's everybody kind of getting on board with this?
It's been complete, yeah. Yeah, the whole family's, we're all in, absolutely.
The family text thread is live. Yeah. Yeah, post game.
Pretty active?
Yeah,
pretty
yeah
active.
It's very active.
Yeah, it's pretty active.
Yeah, there's a lot of funny stuff that comes across that family thread.
Now, Kevin was born in Salt Lake.
Right.
What were you doing in Utah at the time?
I was working as a field marketing rep for Progressive Insurance. We came here from Sacramento, California, and I opened up Utah and Idaho, as a matter of fact, for a brand new territory for Progressive. And then I was transferred to Dallas, Texas in about 1982 or so. And we were there for about 13 years or so. And then we had an opportunity came up. By that time I had left, I was in the automobile industry, working for a couple of different manufacturers and automotive related stuff. So I had a job opportunity come up where it would have taken us either to Denver or to Atlanta, Georgia. And you know, none of our family had ever lived in the South except for my wife's parents, and it had been a long time since they'd been there. But we just really felt like that was the place to be, and it truly was. There were so many great things that happened, not only for Kevin, but for our entire family that opened up opportunities and just wonderful, you know, lifelong friends. And it was just a great place for us as parents to raise a family in a great environment.
And you live in Arizona now.
We do, yep.
So you were in Kevin's backyard when he was with his last professional job. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was very cool, yeah. And almost in his backyard, literally. They were just a mile or two away from us. So, we have three other kids that live in Gilbert, you know, within 3 or 4 miles of where we were at. So we kind of hated to lose him and his family, you know, to come up here, but they're still close enough.
And you also have at least one brother that lives around here too, right?
I have a brother in Cedar Hill, so it was a little bittersweet leaving everyone down there, but he's recently retired, so him and my mom come up here and hang.
Yeah, more games, right?
Yeah.
More games, yeah.
We were thinking about petitioning the NCAA to move the season to the summer. You know, I don't get work, so.
Hang with us. We have Phil Young, Kevin's dad, with us. We'll have some fun with Coach and Phil coming up as we continue on BYU Basketball with Kevin Young. Stick around. BYU Basketball with Kevin Young, presented by Siegfried and Jensen, helping Utah families for over 30 years. Time for tonight's mini game show segment. And as much as Kevin Young loves basketball, his dad, Phil, loves cars. You said you were in the automotive industry for a time, right?
Correct.
We're going to say he's kind of an expert on this on this part of the world. So much so that we're confident he can decipher tonight's visual clues in a game we are calling Decide on the Ride with Phil Young. All right.
All right, let's go. It looks like a blue F-150, by the way, but I'm not sure.
Well, we weren't asking to identify, but we'll go one for one on that one. You've seen My Cousin Vinny, right? The movie My Cousin Vinny? Vinny's wife, of course, Mona Lisa, she was an expert on cars.
Yes,
she nailed things all the time. That's kind of the vibe I'm hoping we get from you here.
Okay. No pressure.
All right. We're going to show you a picture of a vehicle. Your job is quite simple. Identify that car, the make, model, and year. You ready?
All right, sure.
Okay, first one. Here we go.
That's a 1965 Mustang convertible with a 289.
Well, with the 289, that's going to be the bonus point there.
Yep.
Why do we call this a 1964 and a half Ford Mustang?
Well, if I could look real close, if it were a 64 and a half where the windshield wipers fit on the cowl, there's going to be a little chrome piece there it fits over rather than black. So that's one thing.
That would be the differentiation, clearly. Okay, we're going to give him full points on that one, clearly.
I know that because I had a 64 and a half, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Car number two here. What would this thing be?
Oh, that looks like about a 1966 Lincoln Continental with suicide doors.
Okay. We're being told it's a 1967 Lincoln Continental, but if you're in the right, if you're within a year, that you've nailed it, right? Yeah. I mean,
there we go.
Very good. 1967. Now, would this have been like a motorcade vehicle back, like a presidential motorcade vehicle back at the time, do you think?
Yeah, maybe not that particular one, but, President Kennedy was riding in a Lincoln Continental parade car when he was assassinated, unfortunately.
Those were the kinds of cars they used back in the day, though, for those kinds of deals. Yep. Next car, number three.
Oh, I actually owned one of those. That's a 1960 Impala. Mine was white with that red interior. The steering wheel was about this big. You could put 10 of your best friends in the back seat and a hot tub in the trunk.
And just to confirm, he's exactly right, a 1960 Chevy Impala here. So we are just knocking them off here. Yeah. What did you ride around in, Kevin, growing up?
Definitely not that. Yeah. I think a 1990s Chevy Suburban.
Yeah, 1988, actually.
Close.
Yeah.
Okay, close enough. This isn't Kevin's part of the contest. Yeah. All right, next up here, what do we have? It's a red car, Greg's calling it.
Oh, that is about a 1963 Comet, probably a Caliente model. That was their hotter model.
Who makes the Comet?
Mercury.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, a 1963 Mercury Comet. So, well done.
Wow.
Oh, man. Next up, we're coming into the modern age with this next one. This is going to be a what?
Oh, I actually own one of those. That's a Mazda Miata. And mine was the same color, oddly enough. That's about a 2000 and what was mine? That looks like about a 2010, 11, something like that.
2015, but close enough.
Okay.
2015 Mazda Miata.
Yeah.
Why mess with a good thing, right? Yeah. Why mess with a good thing? All right, we're going back into days of yore for this next one. I'm getting kind of a sock hop grease vibe here. Yeah. What do we have here?
It's a 1958 Ford Thunderbird.
1959 Ford Thunderbird, we are told. So you're within a year again.
How many? Like, probably belong to Mary Kay, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Cosmetics magnate. There we go. So how many cars do you have in your garage right now at home?
Only two, unfortunately.
He sold a couple.
He sold a couple over the day. Next up, this is vintage.
Oh, that was my mom's favorite car. That was probably about a 1966 Mercedes SL.
It is just a little. It's just a little older, but a 1963 Mercedes-Benz 230 SL.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was special about that car, if anything?
Well, it was a two-seater. And kind of exclusive, you know. It was, and it's a beautiful automobile. And today, those are going for hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, the value on them has just gone through the roof.
Okay, Kevin, do you like when you bought a car growing up? When you buy cars, would you always like check with dad? Like, is this something? Is this a good? Is a good value? Good buy?
Absolutely. Yeah. Without fail, I would say. Yeah,
and you know what's funny is that I was never into sports growing up. I was always into cars, and my boys were never into cars. They just wanted to have a car to drive. But as they got a little bit older, you know, their tastes changed a little bit, as did their pocketbooks, and they were able to
began to appreciate.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
but, I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, this is again old school.
Oh, you're not going to believe it. My dad actually bought one of those. That is a 1956 Cadillac Coupe de Ville. Ours was pink with a black top, and it, real quick, interesting story. My grandfather, who lived in Salt Lake City, and we lived in Napa, California, had throat cancer surgery. My dad and I drove from Napa all the way to Salt Lake, straight through in that old Cadillac. This is before Interstate 80 was finished, you know, through the Sierra Nevada and stuff. Great memories of that car.
What color was the one you were in?
Oh, pink with a black top.
It's the same color, except that white top there, right?
Top, yep.
I love it. Okay, yep. Next up, and he's just rolling through these here. Oh, this is a funky vehicle here.
Oh, I know that one because this guy owns one. That's a Nissan Patrol.
There we go.
And that one is probably about a 1968 or 69.
65.
65.
Close
it's got
enough.
The side marker lights on it, so, but they looks like that was maybe an add-on. But, yeah, his is called Rusty.
Yeah,
you got to name your vehicle.
Yeah, the kids named it. The kids named it.
Yeah. Okay, our next vehicle. This is,
Okay, you're not going to believe it. I actually had one of those too.
oddly enough, I do believe it. So,
That is about a 1973 Volkswagen. I think that looks like a Super Beetle. 74. Okay.
Yeah. Right there, right in the neighborhood. Well done. He's just killing this, people. We have two more cars for you. Okay. Ready for two more?
All right, let's do it.
Both of the same era-ish. This next one.
It's a 1969 Chevy Nova, and interestingly enough,
my wife had one of those
okay. when we got married. Yeah. So, yeah, one of my favorite cars, by the way.
Very good. A 1970 Chevy Nova. You said 69, 70 is the same deal. Yeah. And then our final vehicle for you to look at here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a 68 Ford Bronco. Obviously had some alterations done to it, but one of Coach's favorite vehicles, as a matter of fact.
Just a little newer, but okay. It's a high-riding Ford Bronco.
Yeah, yep.
Wow. There was not
you
a
big one. Let's go.
Wow. Kevin said it would be hard to stump you.
Well, I will tell you, I went to the Barrett-Jackson auto auction in Phoenix last week, so I kind of brushed up, had some fresh knowledge.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well done. And so, Kevin, you said you're driving something. So you're driving a Nissan right now, that you said, right?
So that one's in the garage. Okay. I have a 65 Nissan Patrol. It's like a cousin of a Land Cruiser. My everyday car is a brand-new Land Cruiser that I bought when we were still in Phoenix when I was down there, and it's a great car.
You drive it up here?
It was actually – I had put an order in it because they just re-released the Land Cruisers, and so – he helped me with the dealer there in Gilbert, and we bought it down there and then put it on a truck, and they brought it up here.
When Kevin was with the Sixers in Philadelphia, I had worked for American Suzuki Automotive, and when he was here in Utah, I got him a Suzuki Grand Vitara. It was an off-lease car. And so by the time he was in Philly, the thing was like 10 or 11 years old, maybe even 12 years old. And they showed a video online of all the players driving into the player parking lot, you know, with their Bugattis and their Rolls Royces and all this stuff. And I told Kevin, I said, I want to see the video when Coach Young comes driving in a 12-year-old Suzuki. And he said, Dad, there's nothing wrong with that car. It runs just fine. And you sold it for about what you paid for it, too, I think. Yeah.
Good economics. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll have audience Q&A for the coach and his dad when BYU basketball. Kevin Young continues. Stay with us. And I'm here with my main man, Brody Kozlowski. Let's play around the world a little bit. BYU Nation to get to know you a little bit. You are a highly rated basketball recruit, but your dad was a football guy.
Yeah.
Growing up, how was that decision to play basketball versus football?
I'd say that decision was kind of easy because my mom was a basketball player, so I kind of just went that route and I didn't really like football.
Nice. You know, the last couple of summers before you joined BYU out of high school, you really made a name for yourself, winning national championships and so on. What was your main core memory from all of the time, you know, in high school and playing to get to where you are now?
I'd say my main core memory was with the Utah Prospects when we won the Adidas championship. That was super fun to be in that environment and everything, so.
Obviously, you know, as one of the top players in the country, like you were coming out of high school, you had whatever school you wanted to go to. You chose USC originally, but then there were some changes. Kevin Young came to BYU. What made you listen to him and wanted to come over here and be a part of the program?
I'd say what made me like listen to him was his experience in the NBA and what he had for this program and what he wants for the future and like having it be an NBA pipeline. So I just trusted him in that.
All right. Obviously, you know, for the last couple of seasons in high school, you were as good as it gets, dominating the game. What has been the biggest difference between the high school game to the college game that you've had to adapt so far?
I'd say just like the intensity, the competition is higher, communication way louder in college and everything, and just like the overall environment.
Nice. You've been a BYU guy your whole life, right? Your mom and your dad. A really big polarizing question for Cougar Nation. Royal blue or navy blue?
I'd have to say royal blue.
Okay, and I do have a follow-up question for you, which is, in your entire family, a bunch of studs, right, incredible players, who is the one person that you don't want to play against on a driveway, on a shooting contest?
Ooh, shooting, I'd say my mom, but like overall game, my dad, because okay. He's so physical.
All right. So, final question for you is, if you had to go on a road trip around the world with one of your current teammates, who would you go with?
I would go with Yegor or Mihailo because they speak multiple languages.
Okay.
So that'd be very helpful.
A follow-up question for Dan is, which one of those two would you ask the DJ?
I say Yegor.
Okay.
That's the exhibit
since live. Shakira.
Boom, just like that. So, hey, I appreciate you doing this. You know, I speak on behalf of every BYU fan. We're super excited to have you here, and good luck this rest of the season.
Thank you.
BYU Basketball with Kevin Young is brought to you by Siegfried & Jensen, helping Utah families for over 30 years. Health Decide, decode your DNA, design your destiny. Ken Garth, we hear you. And Brady Plus, delivering the right supplies plus support to ensure businesses are more successful.
Welcome back to BYU Basketball with Kevin Young. Time now for some audience Q&A with Coach Young and his father, Phil, who's our special guest and maybe our permanent co-host. I don't know. our segment's presented by Ken Garf. We hear you. We have the portable mic set up here in the studio. And what's your question? Who's it for?
All right, my name is Zach. My question's for Coach Kevin. If you had to challenge one of your players to a one-on-one match, who would you pick? And would you need a point handicap to make it a close game?
Definitely would not need a point handicap. Oh, man. Probably Cannon, so I could talk trash to him more than any of the rest of them. Yeah.
Well done. Next up. All right. What's your name, sir?
Walter.
Hello.
My question is to Coach Young's dad. What was Coach Young like at my age?
How old are you?
8.
You're 8.
He lived in a world that revolved around basketball. And he loved basketball. And played in the YMCA about age 8, right? And
yep.
When we lived in Texas?
Yep.
Yeah, that was his world. Yep. He was a very good boy, too. As I'm sure you are, Walter.
When did we have time for one more question, Emma? One more question.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, one more question real quick before the break.
He's my nephew, so I'll
keep him
up.
Awesome.
Okay. question for Coach. Y'all are traveling to UCF this weekend, hopefully for a shorter stay there than you had in 2020, because we were part of the COVID bubble. I've always been curious what that experience was like for people that were there and for you specifically as part of that experiment.
Yeah, I hated it, honestly. It was tough. It was just being away from real life for that long. The basketball was kind of cool to be with no fans. That was my first real, like, that's where I got a real appreciation for Chris Paul. Like, we played them in the bubble and there's no fans, and he just never shut up the whole game. He was calling everything out and, like, you could just hear everything. That was cool. But from a, yeah, it just got super old and it was tough. And yeah, it wasn't my favorite.
Okay, good question, though. Interesting.
That was a good question.
Thank you. Yeah, time now for tonight's And One trivia question presented by Brady Plus, providing Jan-San food service and packaging supplies plus support. Brady Plus ensures businesses are more successful every day. Question true or false this week, BYU's never lost a basketball game to UCF. BYU and UCF on Saturday. The answer's coming up next. Stay with us. BYU basketball champions. Welcome back to BYU Basketball with Kevin Young. Tonight's And One BYU Basketball trivia question, true or false, BYU's never lost a basketball game to UCF. And the answer here is most definitely true. In fact, they'd never met before last year, played them 3 times, swept them. Interestingly, last year's games were played on January 13th, February 13th, and March 13th. And BYU won all 3, regular season sweep plus the Big 12 tournament. Well, there you go. Up next for BYU, it is the Cougs on the go to Orlando for a Saturday showdown at UCF. This is Know the Foe, presented by Health Decide. Decode your DNA, design your destiny. A little bit about the Knights. Pretty good basketball team, as you can see, as they rank well in net and KenPom. They're just under 500 in conference play. Had the lead at Kansas for a lot of that game last night, Coach. Lose 91-87. What a bounce back, because Kansas got them by almost 50 at their place in Orlando. And UCF was right there in Lawrence. You see Keyshawn Hall in league play. He's averaging 21.4. He's already got a 34 and a 40-point game in conference play.
Yeah, he's a handful. Watched a lot of film on him today with the staff. You know, we'll have to, you know, really scheme to slow him down. I mean, I think, you know, to your point about the Kansas game with them, I mean, I just think it speaks to how good our league is. You know, anybody can beat anybody, you know, on a given night. You know, and you see their tempo. I mean, they play totally different than how they played in the past. They're really, you know, running and gunning. So we'll have to, like I said, first team that plays defense probably wins that one.
Okay, broadcast schedule for Saturday looks like this. Cougar pregame live on the radio begins at 3 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Mountain. The game at 4 o'clock Eastern, 2 Mountain. And it says Cincinnati there. That should say UCF. UCF and BYU, that'll be a 2 o'clock game on Saturday afternoon Mountain Time, and postgame radio right after as well. Before we go, one final note from last night's win to close out the program. In our radio postgame last night, Coach Young talked about how while he's usually fairly buttoned down on the sidelines, sometimes he lets loose a little bit, and he brought up one moment in particular last night. I think we have some video. So Richie makes a little, he misses, gets his own rebound, stick back, and one. And where is Kevin Young going on this one? Down the sideline, he disappeared. We may have another angle of this. We may or may not have another angle of this. Coach Young, we see, and then he is suddenly, you're gone. You're down. You ended up in the tunnel. You ended up in the portal, I think, after. No, wait, watch this. Here we go. We get the full view here. The and one, you're pretty happy, and you are gone. Goodbye.
You know, so like I said, sometimes the ex-player just comes out. You know, you just the competitive juices get going, and that was a huge moment in that game.
I loved it. Kevin, always great to have you here. But, Phil, what a pleasure to have you in
tonight.
We had a really good time with you, and
appreciate
we hope to see
it.
A lot of games coming
Absolutely.
Down the stretch.
You bet.
All right, folks, thanks for being here. Have a hand for these guys. All right. We'll see you next week.